Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Insight into Healing. My name is Alexa Servadidio, and I am your host. I have such an exciting show for us tonight. On the line with us, I have Joe Haisley and also Deborah Markowitz. Joseph, from an early age, experiences and perceptions fueled intense impressions of the world, which he channeled into many creative pursuits, including music composition and performance, songwriting, and drama. Joseph first appeared on television in a reoccurring role on The Cosby Show as the family pizza delivery boy, followed by other reoccurring roles on America's Most Wanted, several episodic daytime dramas, and Law and Order. Joseph is also working currently on the Choice trilogy. Our other guest is Deborah Markowitz, who has worked on many sides of the film industry, from being the Nassau County Film Commissioner through three administrations, running the Long Island International Film Expo since its inception, and she's also the author of the Karmic Wind trilogy. Deborah is also a casting director, screenwriter, producer, and director on many independent films. She has written the script for Brother in the Choice trilogy and will be directing the Father segment. She and Joseph will be producing the entire series. Thank you guys so much for joining us this evening.
Thank you, Alexa.
Thank you. So this Choice trilogy, either one who wants to start, how did it all come about?
Okay, you want me to take this one, Joe?
Go ahead. Yep.
Basically, we have a lot of filmmaker friends, and one had produced this short film that was just absolutely brilliant. Joe had seen it and said, you know, I want to do something like that. I want to write a short film that takes place with two or three characters in one location. And he picked something near and dear to his heart, which is his father's journey at the end of his life with multiple sclerosis. So he wrote this called Pop. I fell in love with it. We were going to put it together. And then Joe had the idea, you know what? This can be bigger than that. You know, because at the time the Brittany Maynard situation was coming about, you know, with her and the Death with Dignity Act, and he said, we can make this bigger, we can make a difference. And then the idea for the trilogy came out, and we banded together with another director and writer who wrote one. I wrote one, Joe wrote one. We're all going to be directing each other's, and then Joe needs to take it from there.
Yes, well, basically, it surrounds the topic of death with dignity, and the fact that we, as a society, really have limited choices when we are given a diagnosis that we are terminally ill. You know, as Deborah mentioned, I have a personal history with terminal and debilitating illness. My father had multiple sclerosis. So that was a good starting point because it was so near to my heart and near to my memory, even though it ended in 2008 for my dad. And as Deborah mentioned, the Brittany Maynard story then came out, and it's all about relationships. We don't bring up the subject of death until we're faced with it. And I think people need to start talking about it and talking about how they feel about it. So many people go through struggles when a loved one dies because we're not prepared. As a society, we just don't talk about it. I remember when my grandmother was little, when I was little and my grandmother, all her friends used to whisper the word cancer, you know, because mm-hmm. it was such an evil word. And back then when you were diagnosed with cancer, it was a death sentence. You know, well, that's no longer the case. But I think we do the same thing with death and terminal illness. We don't talk about it. You know, the ALS Ice Bucket Challenge was very successful in bringing one of the numerous illnesses that affect people terminally and affect their motor skills. And the funny thing about it is I've been doing a poll recently, and I was asking people, do they know what the S in ALS stands for? Surprisingly enough, outside of the medical community, even educated people didn't know that it stands for sclerosis. The most common answer was syndrome. Well, sclerosis is along the lines of what my dad had, multiple sclerosis. And these are the things that we're going to be bringing to light in this trilogy. These illnesses that people really aren't educated on, but yet they're pouring ice over their head. However, I was grateful for the fact that at least it became a topic.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Watching someone's body debilitate and decrease from a disease, especially a loved one, is probably one of the most painful things you can go through.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
So when my yeah, go ahead, Alexa. I'm sorry. I'm a rambler, so you've got to cut me off.
Oh, that's okay. That's fine. I just think it's just such a great idea. When I spoke speaking to you before we did the show, just about this topic of bringing it up. It's such a controversial topic. And what I really wanted to, my mission for this show was, we're not asking anyone to pick a side. You don't have to defend. But I think to hear both sides and to hear your story, and I think also, you know, I spoke to you a lot about, you know, your father's story, and it really being able to hear it with compassion and empathy to see what people go through and why these decisions are out there as choices, and that it's a really important thing to make sure people can really explore before, you know, jumping to a conclusion or having any judgment.
Yes, and that's going to be the whole point of a trilogy. Why we put a trilogy together is so you can see, we're going to show all aspects of the argument, and we're going to show that we do believe in miracles. My father had MS for 30 years. His is basically classified as sporadic progressive, which is, you know, he would have a bout and he would get up and then we would have to see how much of his motor skills he lost afterwards. My father never wanted to give up. My father never wanted to quit. My father never said, why me? My father was the most beloved man that you could ever meet. When he became bedridden, he would do everything by phone, and people would fall in love with this man over the phone because of his character. However, the last year of his life, my father would basically aspirate, because he would really aspirate on his own saliva. We had a bolus feed him. He couldn't drink. He couldn't eat. He couldn't swallow. His throat mechanisms, without getting into medical terms that only a few people would know, just wasn't working. So when he would swallow, fluid would go into his lungs.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, we would go into the hospital. They would give him enough antibiotics that could cure a horse, and they would suction out all the fluid and mucus out of his lungs because it was becoming infected from all the fluids. So we would go in the hospital 2 weeks, come home for 2 weeks, go in for 2 weeks, come home for three, and this lasted a year. After my father has dealt with, I couldn't even go through all the stories, but basically he was bedridden at this time and could not leave his bed without assistance and couldn't even sit up on his own. So what we were left with, my father had to be of sound mind and body when he made the decision to refuse care. So when he refused care, basically you can't be fed. You can't be given medicines aside from helping you with your pain. Well, I watched for pretty much about 3 weeks. My healthy, joking, happy father fill up with fluid and basically drowned. And since he was such a strong man, it took that long. And it took painful memories of the loved ones that watched him sit there and harbor his breath for 3 days prior to St. Paddy's Day, which is when he passed on, I guess, to honor our Irish heritage. But he's the perfect candidate for this medicine. He wouldn't have been alive as long as he was without medical treatment. When he decided to refuse medical treatment, there is no one that can argue that he is going to die. So my goal would be is for someone like that to go more peacefully. We do it with animals. I don't know how many animal lovers we have out there, but I've had the pleasure and the discomfort of putting animals that I love down. And it, as sad as it was still peaceful to watch them just go to sleep, as opposed to leaving them laying there and waiting for them to die. I think it's more humane to do that with an animal, and we're not doing it with humans, who also have that same problem.
Yeah, we had mentioned, Alexa, before we were speaking that, again, it's not that anyone has to take this, but somebody with a terminal illness that doesn't know how bad it's going to get, but they know it's going to get bad, that sometimes it's a sense of peace just having it available. I mean, Joe can give you stats on the people who can take it and then choose not to. But the fact that they can have it, because once you're not of sound mind and body anymore, you don't have a choice. You know, it's taken out of your hands, you know. So this is something that if you knew it was going to get really bad, you wanted to have an option available. You wanted to have, I hate to say it, but almost like a security blanket if the pain was that bad you couldn't take it anymore. Again, and you fit the rest of the criteria, you know, it's something that you would have the ability to do. Joe, I think the stats were really amazing that you were telling me before about the people who take it, who can get it and actually don't take it.
Yes, I mean, from my knowledge, and these aren't exact numbers, these are, you know, roundabout figures. Well, right now it's only legal in 4 states in the U.S. Oregon's figures as of last year is over 350 people applied for the medicine. Only 171 people were granted the prescription, and only 60% of them actually took it. The other 40% and most of the people that were polled said that they just they had such a relief, that security blanket that Deborah was speaking of, that the pill was there in case they needed it. It's self-ingested. It's not like, you know, you're actually, it's not like actually somebody's doing it to you or for you. It has to be self-ingested.
Okay. Which makes a big statement, too, I think, is when someone gets to that point and gets to that decision in their mind that the pain is so unbearable and this quality of life is not there anymore. And I think sometimes it's hard for people to understand it, but when you have a firsthand experience of watching someone deteriorate like that and really suffer, it's a tough choice, but I think it's almost to the point where watching them suffer like that is even more damaging.
Yes. I'm kind of putting my own life out there a little bit. I understand that a lot of people suffer from post-traumatic stress disorder after losing a loved one. It's very common now to be diagnosed with that. I actually didn't really feel that disheartened by my father's passing. He was it was the end of a long life that he suffered. It was actually the moments that we went through with his illness, you know, the numerous pitfalls that we went through that this debilitating disease caused his body to react, you know. It wasn't his death. I remember the evil things like watching his lungs collapse and him reaching out to me to help him while there was doctors all around us, and I had no clue what to do. Those are the things that are implanted in my brain, and I think, you know, if you ask other people who have dealt with a loved one in this situation, and I'll just say sclerosis, so we can cover all the bases, whether it's ALS, MS, or the numerous other medical, you know, diseases that are terminalized under sclerosis. But, you know, those are the things that's in your brain. And stay implanted in your memory, not the death. The death is the easier part because we've kind of dealt with it on all levels. So to have to suffer with your life is one thing, but when you know you're dying, why not make it easier? Why not make it more peaceful? Mm-hmm. The laws are set up so you can't just go in and say, hey, you know, I've kind of hit a bad patch, I'm depressed, I want to just, you know, end my life. You know, it's not set up for that. This is set up for people who are clinically dying. There is no medical way to help them.
Okay. So there's laws. So there's nothing, because I know some listeners might be nervous. What about if someone's suicidal or depressed? That is not part of the criteria. It has to be a medical diagnosis, a diagnosis of terminal illness that any medical help will not improve this person's quality of life.
Right. And it's different in every state. So I don't want to quote just one state. I know that I can say that in one state you need two different doctors to sign off on it. You also need a judge to sign off on it. It's basically a 6-month process to even get the prescription, and there's many people involved, many educated people and legalities involved for you to get this. This isn't open for a way out for people.
Yes.
And I don't want to say I don't believe in miracles. I do. I do believe in miracles, and I do believe that we should be open to them, and people should fight the diseases and the illnesses that they're given. Again, my father never gave up. My father never quit. My father, excuse my French, kicked MS's ass, as far as I'm concerned. He did.
Mm-hmm.
He lived with it for 30 years, and here's a guy I watched, you know, I came home and he's like crawling to the shower because he wanted to take a shower. I'm like, dude, why didn't you wait for me? He's like, I just wanted to get in, you know, and he didn't care. He really fought through it, but I didn't have the option, and my dad and I were very close, and the one thing I couldn't give him that we discussed numerous times was I couldn't give him a peaceful death. I had to watch him drown for 3 weeks, and those are the people who it's for. That's who this is for. My dad is the perfect candidate. Anyone in the medical community would have basically sworn to the fact that once he rejected care, it was done. Because that's how we kept them alive. We can keep people alive medically, but we can't put them to rest peacefully medically. That's my argument for it.
Mm-hmm. And it also sounds like this decision is not something that happens overnight. As you said, it's a long-term decision. It sounds like there was a lot of suffering, and there was time to really think about it for the person who's saying, you know, this, I think my quality of life is not at a good point, and also having that dignity. And I know it's hard for family members and spouses and people that are around, but I think sometimes when it comes to that person saying, okay, I can't do this anymore, maybe even just as you said, having that choice, having that peace of mind that, okay, if it gets really bad or if it really gets to a point, I have a peaceful way out. And I think we never know. Each case is so different. You never know the pain that they're suffering, how bad it's really going to get.
Yeah, and Joe,
person.
It's probably important, too, that, you know, your father had mentioned to you a couple of times that, you know, if it ever gets really bad, you know, what can we do? You know, he might want to mention that as well, because that's something he actually had looked into, but at the time there wasn't that choice at all.
Well, oddly enough, Deborah, since you know this story probably as well as I do, Alexa, my father, when he was first diagnosed in his 40s and he passed when he was 67, he encouraged me to read a book that he read, which was Dr. Kevorkian's book on assisted suicide. So it wasn't like we haven't talked about it. We talked about many different ways out when the time came. And just so happens that around the time Dad started to get really bad, Dr. Kevorkian, well, was convicted of a felony and put in prison. So my father and I said, well, it looks like he can't help us, and it looks like, you know, I can't do anything, because my father said, I would never, ever ask you to help me with this and be able to leave you behind with the mess that it would cause for your life. Because we did talk about it. We did. And it was a serious topic. It wasn't something that we took lightly, and it wasn't something that was never brought up. We talked about it over 20 years of what is a good out plan, you know, for him.
What was your first reaction? The first time he brought it up to you, what was your first reaction? What did you think?
My dad was a man of many words, but he wasn't one to show his emotions. And he wasn't one to give in to anything, any battle, any fight. My dad was a fighter. So when he asked me to read that book, I knew he was scared. So my reaction was, you know, wow. You know, I automatically felt the fear that he had of what's going to happen to him. The unknown, which Deborah brought up, is going to happen. You know, just so happens that he was such a badass. He lived over 30 years with this thing. But, you know, and that's just it. You know, that was my first reaction. My first reaction was one of hurt because I knew he was scared. And don't get me wrong, MS is taking leaps and bounds with medical care and drugs. And look, I'm not telling anyone not to fight because my father fought, and he fought on his own. So, you know, right now, the amount of care that my dad wasn't able to receive, you know, the people are getting now has grown leaps and bounds. So,
yes.
But when that care runs out, and when I hope this doesn't happen, I really truly hope we find cures or at least medicines that can help people live healthier and longer and less debilitating lives.
Mm-hmm.
But when it gets down to it, you know, again, we don't have a lot of choices. In all but four states, we have no choices. We have palliative care. And not that palliative care isn't beautiful. The ladies who took care of my dad in hospice, the staff, the doctors, the male nurses, I can't tell you how incredible they were.
Yeah, amazing people.
When someone's not cognitive and laying there, we don't know how much pain they're in. You can say they're not in pain, but we don't know.
Yeah. And what's interesting, I know we spoke a little bit before the interview, but, you know, I had watched my father die for 4 years of lung cancer, and I was always on the side, you know, he'll fight it, he'll get through all means possible. And then towards the end, you really start seeing the suffering and what's going on. And my mom is on the total opposite side of, you know, if I'm really suffering and there's something going on, you know, I need that way out. You know, don't let me just be a vegetable. And I find that I'm caught in the middle. But hearing your story and really speaking to you and Deborah really sheds light. I know on a topic we don't want to explore sometimes because it's a tough topic, but it really sheds light and information and education on what really is going on.
Oh, absolutely. My parents have said that. I mean, I'm very lucky. I'm in a unique position that I do still have both of my parents who have their issues, but they're still relatively healthy, and they both say the same thing. You know, if I go, she's taking me out. If he goes, I'm, you know, I mean, they just, you know, if they're really bad, they don't want to stay. Now, again, who knows what happens, you know, or what they'll get or what'll, you know, how everything will end up. You know, but it's, you know, I completely, after hearing Joe's story and really, you know, in depth, you know, to not be able to help your parent, to just watch them suffer and literally drown in their own fluids and you can't do anything, is, if they want the way out, not to be able to give them that is just got to be incredibly heartbreaking. And I don't know what I would do. You know, this isn't, as Joe said, this isn't about, you know, this is what you have to do, because I don't know what I would do. I'm a big believer in, you know, stay till the end kind of thing. But, you know, who knows until you're in that kind of pain? You know, it's just no way to really know until you're there.
Yes. Yes. And like you said, I believe in miracles too. I believe in God. But sometimes I think there's a time where the person is suffering so much. And it's a tough subject. It's kind of, you know, but weighing out both sides really sheds light on what's going on. What do you want to accomplish with the Choice Trilogy? What is your mission with it?
Well, for me, and my aspect of it is actually just to get people talking about it. You know, I believe in the right of choices. That's the amazing thing about this country we live in. I love the United States probably as much as anyone. I am a patriot. I think it's about choice. To give people options. We have so many options for them to live, but when it comes to their pain and suffering, we have one. And I'm not even saying if I was diagnosed with a terminal illness, whether I would take this route or not. I just think that people should have that choice. But also the film's going to cover the other end of this too, the other aspect of it. We're going to cover, you have to believe, I still believe in miracles. I believe in fighting. I believe in, but we don't talk about it. That's, again, I know I said this in the beginning. This, you know, every time you bring up the topic of death, it reminds me of my beautiful Nana saying, "Ooh, cancer," and they all whisper, "Uh-oh." We're always whispering about it. We're not talking about it enough. You know, the trilogy covers MS, which also covers all the other sclerosis syndrome. We're going to deal with MS because I know it so well. But we're also going to be talking about AIDS, and we're going to be talking about drug addiction, and we're going to be discussing in a fictional way the Brittany Maynard story, because the news is pretty much, excuse me, over the Brittany Maynard story. So we may not hear it too much, but I want to show what people go through with this. You know, everybody shows the beauty of, you know, what happens in heaven and all that, and I love all that, but let's just show the reality of what people deal with death.
Mm-hmm. Right, and what we hope to cover too, the whole thing is really about choice. You know, that's my biggest thing is choice in any kind of human rights, choice in, you know, your health care, choice in just about everything there is. That's one of the biggest thing to me. But with even the stories that we're telling, we want to bring attention to other things about perhaps some of these diseases that people aren't really aware of. Upon a lot of the research Joe's done, and I've learned things that I had no idea. I mean, I didn't know that the AIDS medication has come a long way. People don't really get sick from it like they used to. They used to almost feel sicker on the medication than without it. That's completely changed. But how, if like antibiotics per se, if you stop taking them, you can actually get immune to the medication. People don't know that. I didn't know that. To the AIDS medication. So there's, you know, just bringing up and, you know, without hitting people over the head with it, but also doing some education as well and bringing attention to the organizations, you know, that deal with these things. So there is help for people they're not even aware of. So it's kind of multifaceted with choice really being the banner that it's all under, is trying to educate people as well and doing it in a way where you're watching a movie. Maybe somebody wouldn't watch a documentary. Maybe they wouldn't read an article on it, but the movie might make them think. And as Joe said, a lot of this is about just getting people to think about these things that they're not aware of, you know, to bring it to the forefront.
Mm-hmm. Now, the other two parts of the trilogy, how were they set up, without not giving out too much information, but how were they set up and put together?
Okay. I mean, I can just speak to, as far as the brother one, which is the one I wrote, there's two other parts to this. We're starting with a short version called Mother, which is pretty much a shorter version of the daughter issue, because we just want to get something out there quickly as we work on the rest of this, because it is a long process. But Joe had mentioned, well, what about, you know, two brothers? One has AIDS, and then he talked about, the daughter one, and I said, you know what, I want to write the brother one. And so he kind of gave me two sentences, and I came home that day, and I basically said, to my partner, I said, basically, I'm writing, and I'm not coming out of here until I finish. If you want to put food in front of me, that's fine, but the story just really came to me, you know, and then, of course, we put a lot of research and, you know, the AIDS topic in that and whatnot, and Joe spoke to a couple of people. One of the people we just worked with on another film, who's involved in some AIDS advocacy groups, and really tried to put information in that. But it's just basically a story about two brothers. One has AIDS, and he's just gone off his medication because he's also a drug addict, and he asks his brother to really help him to what he feels is the end of his life. So that was that story, and that's going to be directed by David Spoutro, who's another writer-director, and I'm going to be directing Pop, and then there's which obviously came from Joe's background. And then the other one is based loosely on a fictionalized version of the Brittany Maynard story, which David's writing and Joe's going to be directing. So if you want to add anything to that, Joe?
Well, it's funny because since the talk of the trilogy started, I mean, it's just growing by leaps and bounds with the education that I'm getting on, you know, the Death with Dignity Act, the various diseases that are out there. I applaud the medical community for all the advances we have made and basically sometimes curing but also sustaining these diseases to live longer and healthier. And I don't ever want to dispute that. And I'm hoping that this film is, this trilogy, what you get from all three of them is you get three different versions and three different sides to keep people talking. So you may not be able to relate to one, but you may relate to the other two. The other thing that we've done with this, which is really great, Deborah mentioned the third party and David. You know, the three of us have different strengths in what we do, and we're pulling all that together to create one film. You know, typically it's, you know, a lot of films rely on one idea and one person. This is a group of people, and it's not just us three. There are other people involved that have taken a passion for this project. This isn't just a film. It's a passion project, for real. You know, we pretty much, you know, even Deborah and her casting, we know if you don't, if you're not into the project, you really shouldn't do it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's borderline mockumentary, but with our creative twist to it, you know. And everyone that is on board already has already donated a lot of free time and a lot of energy and a lot of thought into how this is going to come out and what we're going to do with it.
I think all the elements of this trilogy is amazing, that the education, the organizations involved, the personal touch to it, the personal story, the different personal stories, and really the directions that you're going with this trilogy is something that really stands out from many other films. I think it's really something that you go to and you come out with a discussion. You come out with and saying, what, you know, what do you feel about this? It's something that's ongoing. It's a film that gives back, that kind of keeps that conversation going, keeps those thoughts going, that is really, I think, important, which is going to be really a key factor for this film, I feel.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I think that's the whole thing, as Joe said, is to get people talking about it. Raise awareness, but get them to talk about it. You know, the things that are difficult to talk about, it'll be right in front of your face, and hopefully people will be talking about it long after and maybe doing their own research, you know, and learning things about these different causes and options and choices and whatnot. And I do love the idea of the collaboration, which was Joe's idea also. But David, I've known since I saw his film several years ago, and we were planning on working together anyway in 2015 or 2016, but this really, you know, sped that up, and he is just an amazing writer, you know, and plus an incredible director, so it's a way for us to each bring our strengths together, really polish them up to the best, the scripts to the best up that, you know, that they can be. You know, and it's a very interesting exercise besides everything else. So it's fun. I'm a big fan of collaboration. You know, I do feel there's enough creative work out there for everybody. And if you can enhance anybody, you know, anybody's career who you know has the talent or the insight or whatever, it's just a wonderful thing to do. So hopefully maybe that'll even inspire people to do things like this as well, you know, which is another aspect of it.
Yes. How do listeners find out more about the Choice Trilogy? How can they follow you and get updates?
Okay, well, there's several ways they can do it. They can look on, if they're on Facebook, they can just put in the search engine for Father, Brother, Daughter, Father, comma, Brother, comma, Daughter, and it's under film, and it should come up. If they're not on Facebook right now until Halsey Films gets its site up, they can go to Intention Films and Media, Intention Films with an S, and Media,
and then go to the film section, and they can go to choice father, brother, daughter. And it basically gives them the whole breakdown of what we're doing it, who we're doing it with, and then the link, if they do have Facebook, the link is on there, as well as if we're allowed to mention the GoFundMe campaign, if they were interested in donating,
yes,
they can go there as well. There's a link right there. And it has our pictures on it, so you know who we are.
Yes.
And it also gives you our background as filmmakers and basically on who we are. So it's a lot of information right there.
I think that's also amazing, too, that both of you have a very extensive background and experience in the film industry, too.
Right.
So it's very important for our listeners to really be able to be able to read about that, too. A lot of good work being put into this trilogy.
Thank you.
Thank you. Well, the GoFundMe page, so everyone knows, it's gofundme.com/choicefbd. And this is the only online campaign we're doing. This is another thing that's very outside of the box for the film industry. How this film is going to be funded throughout the course of the next year is we are going to do fundraisers with the charities that we are basically taking our stories from. So it's also about awareness. We're going to create awareness for MS. And possibly some other sclerosis syndromes, whether it be ALS or other ones. We're going to be doing fundraisers with HIV awareness and another one close to my heart, drug addiction. We haven't touched on that yet, but I'll mention that in a second. And then also, you know, getting the bill out there so everybody can read it. I'm not saying that they have to vote yes or no. I just want them to read it. I want them to understand it. You know, I don't want people to make a judgment on it until they know what they're judging against or for. So the GoFundMe page is just to get us started. It's going to get us a short film that we can show people why we're raising money. So when we do a campaign with MS, the proceeds are going to go to the film, but also a good portion of the proceeds are going to go to the organization. But most of all, we're going to be raising awareness for the topic of the film and awareness for the diseases. I think a lot of people find topics in suffering, but they don't give back. So this is going to be our way of giving back. I know it's a lot of work, and people may think I'm a little wacky for going out there and doing it this way, but this is what we decided, you know. You can't just steal a story from somebody and not get back to them. So that's the way I look.
And I was just about to ask you this question. You are both of you are really kind of attacking three huge, very serious topics. How do you take care of yourself during this time? Because it must be, I mean, also, you know, kind of traumatizing, reliving things and dealing with some very soul-searching topics and emotional areas.
How do we take care of ourselves? I mean, I think Joe is the one really delving into the depths of all of this more than any of us. I mean, this is, you know, we all have our businesses besides this. We all have, you know, we have obviously businesses that are in the film related and film careers, but we also have day jobs, you know. So because it's so near and dear to our hearts, it's, I mean, you know, I got to make sure I get my couple of sessions of yoga in every week. I got to make sure that, you know, I meditate most days of the week, that, you know, I'm working out, that, because I think Joe very much is like me and David as well. We could work 24 hours a day. You know, so we're kind of all really driven. So trying to find that balance is very difficult. But, you know, you also know that you are doing something that is going to hopefully make a difference. If these films show at film festivals all over the world, and we can get people all over the world talking about these things or get them a little more educated about a certain subject, then you're doing something important. So making a film is a lot of hard work, and it's also really fun if you love it. But to do something that makes a difference, I mean, that's just really the icing on the cake, you know. So we all kind of have to remind ourselves not to work so hard. But, you know, when it's important and you love what you're doing, it's, you know, there's nothing really you'd rather be doing.
Yes.
Well, for
your
me,
passion.
I have a Nutribullet. you know.
Love those.
So I get my nutrients, and then I have a 160-pound English Mastiff mix rescue named Romeo.
Aww.
And He keeps emotions in check.
Mm-hmm.
He's very his empathy is very wide open. So he knows when to push the right buttons if I get too engrossed in things, and he forces me by whining and barking to take him for a walk. So that's how I get through it. It's actually I have to give a lot of credit to the dog Romeo.
And I have my Trippy, who's my little sweetheart, my rescue. But the same thing, you know. When you get she needs something, it's like, oh, okay. You know, with that face,
yes.
How do you turn that down? But,
yes. I have my Samson, my German Shepherd, so I totally understand.
Yeah.
Big animal lover.
Well, they have this way that they know. It's time for you to get up off the couch, put the computer down, and go, let's go take a walk and let's just go do our thing. So that's my way of dealing with this. But you know what? It's a labor of love. You know, I've been blessed in this industry to do a lot of different things as a musician and as an actor. And you know, I think this is my way of doing a film that gives back, and doing a project that gives back. And you know, that's hopefully after it's all done, that's what I hope we accomplish. You know, and plus, my job is to annoy the other two writers.
And he does it really well.
It's more than enough research than they can handle. I am the link giver. I give way too many links and way too many thoughts on making sure that we say the right thing or do the right thing. I know I'm killing the creative process in a way, but at the same time, you know, I just want to make sure our message doesn't affect anyone in a negative way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I'm going to be, one of the topics we're dealing with is drug addiction. I don't know if you know, I mean, we have a surge of heroin use.
Oh, yes.
And it's everywhere. It's not limited demographic. It's pretty much hit every area we can think of. And it starts with prescription drugs that they find in the cabinet, or it starts on the street where, you know, kids that aren't fortunate enough to be in a better neighborhood are spoon-fed and given these drugs. We got to talk about that. We have to talk about that. We have to bring that, you know, out there and make people talk about it. You know, brother is the one that deals with drug addiction, and you know, we're hoping to convey what people act like and look like when they're drug sick. You know, if you never saw anybody when they're drug sick, it's almost terminal, even though it's not. They actually feel that way. You know.
Yes.
And these are things that need to be talked about, and these are things that I think everybody in every household, no matter who you are, has experienced. You've experienced death. You've experienced possibly somebody you know who was addicted to drugs or painkillers. You know.
Mm-hmm. I think it's great also to take the stigma off of it. I've done a few shows on heroin and crack and cocaine, and a lot of people are like, oh, that's really not, you know, is it that popular? Maybe not in certain neighborhoods. It is across the board, drug addiction, overdose, especially heroin. Heroin has really taken over as an epidemic, and I think sometimes people are in denial because there's guilt, there's shame, or I don't want to talk about it, but it's a very, very serious, serious epidemic.
Mm-hmm. No question.
And that's what Deborah is portraying in the script she's writing. You know, you're going to have two brothers, and one is successful, and we actually point out that the other brother was successful until he basically became hooked. And he turned to heroin because of his... My dog
it goes Romeo.
He wants to say hi.
You want to get on this, bud?
He wants to go out.
Thanks, Rome. You're on the radio, buddy. see what I mean? That's him. This is what he does. These are the things that we're going to discuss. And, you know, we're not taking your atypical, quote-unquote, drug addict that you see on the street. We're taking the guy who went to the street because of his drug addiction. You know, people don't go there just because they're from there. They come from all walks of life, and that's what you're going to see. You know, so we're excited. I'm excited. I can't thank you for having us on the show enough to actually keep the word out, because we're planning on hopefully doing a lot of these, and you'd be one of the first ones to step up to interview us. I appreciate it.
Yeah, definitely.
When you told me the story of the trilogy and everything, I said, it's perfect. Your trilogy is perfect for my show. And I think with the education, giving back, and I think all the different topics, I just also thought of a subject too, caregivers. What about the caregivers of these people? That is really serious too. That is a very kind of people don't understand what you go through, the grieving process. You go through PTSD. You go through depression, especially then after the person passes. What does that caregiver have left? They've been taking care of that person for so many years. All of a sudden, what is their purpose in life? What defines them? It really impacts the whole family and everyone involved.
Yeah, I think that Joe has pointed out to me that it's usually the woman that's the caregiver, you know, the daughter or whatever, and his circumstance. It could be anybody. I mean, his circumstance, it was him. Yeah, you know, we touch on that, and, you know, I wish we could really even push more information out, but you can't really hit people over the head with it. You just need to get them, you know, to start thinking about it. Yeah, but there's so many people that are caregivers, and I see so many of my friends as well, and what it does to them, you know. It's just amazing the toll that, you know, that these people should really, I mean, really be revered by society, too, for taking care of their elders in a society where it seems almost everything else is disposable, you know, that they give really their all, you know, when they flip from either raising their children, if they've had children, to taking care of a parent. And some people are doing both at the same time. And I can't even imagine, you know, how that happens. I mean, maybe we'll, you know, we say this is a trilogy, but I don't know that there's not more of this coming up somewhere, you know.
I was just about to ask you, are you sure it's just going to be a trilogy? Because I think you guys have a lot of great
will
subjects.
Be, but, you know, but I don't know, Joe, what do you think?
I don't know. Listen, we'll see. I hope I conveyed that we're pretty open-minded to anything. In the aspect of what you were referring to as far as the caregivers, Alexa, the funny thing is that not only do the people who are sick make really hard choices in this trilogy, but also the people who are with them are faced with hard choices. So we're hoping that you, when you see this, that you actually sympathize with the caregiver also. You know, you're going to see that. We don't get into what you say, but, you know, you're going to see what they go through.
Yes.
And, you know, as you know, I mean, you know, mental health is another issue I'd like to cover, but we only have 3 films. you know, all right, maybe there's 4 now. I don't know, but... You know, we do hopefully, you know, in the writing so far, convey that you know, the people who are the caregivers are suffering as well, and they're faced with some pretty dramatic choices to make.
Yes.
You know, and
I see a lot of them in my private practice, and too also at the clinic that I work at, the caregivers that are left behind. There's a lot of guilt. There's a lot of questioning, and should I have done this? Should I, you know, it's really, and then a lot of grieving and depression. And healing.
Yeah. Listen, that really is what brought me to start this whole thing, this whole concept, is that, you know, it took me a while, and a lot of talking and a lot of support to get to the point where, you know, I said I did everything I could do, you know, and I figured it out. I'm happy. I became the man my dad wanted me to become. The only thing I couldn't give him, out of all the stuff I did for him, was more cheesecake from Michelle Lori Cheesecakes, and a better way to pass, you know, a more peaceful way to go, which really kind of sparked all this, you know, which was my own healing. You know, and what's funny is in the pop script, you really see what a pain in my ass that my dad was. He was. It wasn't easy. It was a pain in the ass on a daily basis. But
mm-hmm.
when you sit back and think about it, you know, my father, as he was going through a transition, I remember my brother and I moving his handicap bar next to the toilet like three times mm-hmm. in a week. And this was a shining moment for me. And I realized after the third time we did it, as I walked out of there, that he, as much of a pain in the ass it was for us to do it, how much of a pain is it for him to just do something simple that we take advantage of, which is get up and down from a toilet?
Yes.
And those are the
things. It puts things into perspective.
It puts it in perspective for you. It really does. You know, just the simple fact that us moving a bar an inch can make something that we all take advantage of on a daily basis, moving in an inch made it that much better for him and that much easier for him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know?
I think one of the kind of cool things, I know Joe had gone to Senate hearings on the Death with Dignity Act and whatnot. And so, Joe, what day was it passed in New Jersey?
Well, mm-hmm. it passed to the Assembly on my father's birthday.
Oh, wow.
Isn't that great?
Yeah.
There's a
it
gift
passed,
to your dad and a gift to you.
Yeah, it was his birthday gift. It passed through, it made it through the first phase of voting on his birthday. You know, and I know, you know, I know for a fact my father only had a phone and one hand to dial with, and I bought him this headset so he didn't have to hold the phone up to his ear. The state of New mm-hmm. Jersey should be very thankful that my father passed in 2008 because everyone would know who he was by his fighting this bill. Whether my dad would have did it or not, I don't know. You don't know until somebody's faced with it, but I can guarantee you everyone at the State House in New Jersey would know his name and know what he's fighting for.
Yeah.
That's just the way he was. And they would love it. They would love to hear his story. They would sit there and talk to him for hours. He was that able to, he probably would have had the bill already passed if he was here, all the way through the Senate, and it would already be signed by Governor Christie. He probably would have called his office 1,000 times a day as well.
Wow.
It's just that, you know, I'm seeing things that, yeah, I think we just got to talk about it. I think we have to talk about it.
Yeah. Your father must be smiling in heaven. He must be so proud.
Oh, he's also still a pain in the ass. He's pushing me a little too at the moment, but that's all right.
Yes. Keep moving. Keep going. Don't get...
Yeah, listen. Don't get me wrong. Everybody, listen. My dad is endearing, but don't get me wrong. This gift to Gab, I got it from him. The emails and the text messages that my poor writing partners are getting, that's all from him. This is all... all learned behavior that he taught me. So, you know, he wasn't that much of a gem. He was still human. I don't want to put him on this pedestal. But he was a great guy. He was a great guy that suffered from an awful disease that a lot of people do. And again, I'm not an advocate. I'm not. I didn't sign up for one team. I didn't sign up for anything. I just want people to talk about it. And I do want people to have a choice. Not saying you do it, you know. There were miracles that happened with my father's illness, that things that happened to him and good things that happened to him along the way that I consider to be miracles. So I think you got to live your life. But when you're on your way out, I think we might have to just think about having different choices.
Yeah. Well, I just want to thank you both so much for coming on my show tonight. It was just so amazing and so enlightening. And I commend you both for the work that you're doing. And I cannot wait to see this trilogy and to learn more about your projects.
Thank you, Alexa. Really appreciate you letting us speak about this.
I don't have enough words to thank you, Alexa. I appreciate it. You know, it's dear to our hearts, and thank you for just letting us talk about it and bringing it up. You know, if anyone wants to reach out, even, you know, as you go to the film site, Deb, can you give that one more time?
Yeah, if you're on Facebook, go to father, brother, daughter, under film, and that'll come up there, or you can also go to Intention Films with an S, intentionfilmsandmedia.com site, and look under films, and that'll give you information, choice father, brother, daughter, about all of us and the project. There's also a GoFundMe campaign, which is www.gofundme.com/choice F as in father, B as in brother, D as in daughter. So gofundme.com/choicefbd. You can donate any amount. And if you'd like to also donate it in the name of a loved one that you've lost or somebody who's suffering, you know, you can put a tribute right there on the wall, because we really are all in this together. You know, everybody's lost someone or knows somebody who's lost someone through something very tragic, basically, and painful. So, you know, put it right there on the wall. We can also mention on Facebook. And we also do have videos there where Joe talks about some of the journey that we're going through. So we hope that, you know, you can check that out and, you know, send us messages through Facebook or the site. And, you know, hopefully we can answer some questions for you.
Actually, you should address the messages to me, because Deborah and David are feeling enough messages from me alone.
That's right. Everybody, call Joe.
Yeah, I mean, they have enough. I'm basically the one. They don't need another message. So, and I'm happy to open up to the topic. I, fortunately, when I went to the state senate, I heard the opposition, and I applaud the opposition. You know, I applaud people to have their opinions, and I'd love to hear them. So pop on Facebook or wherever and send us a note. And Alexa, again, there's not enough words to thank you for letting us share this topic with you.
Yes.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And I'll also be posting your information on my page, Insight into Healing, on Facebook. And if anyone wants to send any questions, you can send them to insightintohealing@gmail.com. Everyone, thank you so much for listening tonight. Have a good night. And God bless.
Thank you.